And I'd like to call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order at 1:06 p.m. Today is Monday, February 26th. Members present are Representative Birch, Representative Parrish, Representative Tallarico, Representative Johnson, the co-chairs, Representatives Tarr and Josephson, and the Vice Chair, Representative Lincoln. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Assisting us today is our recording secretary, Deborah Tillinghast, and our LIO moderator, Ben, or is it Doug?
It's Doug.
It's Doug Bridges. I remind members and those in the audience to please silence your cell phones. Today we have a full agenda. We'll begin by interviewing. Actually, I would recommend, since I don't see, I only see one of the confirmees on the phone now, I'm going to recommend, unless there's an objection, that we try to wrap up our work on 305 first. And then proceed to the Big Game Commercial Services Board nominees, and then take up 367. Although, well, it's sort of even now in terms of the number of callers. So I think, yes, the way I've just described, we'll go 305, Big Game Commercial Services Board, 367. On Friday, we had a lengthy discussion about page 2 of House Bill 305, and we adopted one amendment, a conceptual amendment to remove the word space. We then discussed at some length a second conceptual amendment. We did not adopt that conceptual amendment. So we have a new amendment today that to be consistent with our conceptual amendment on Friday needs a slight reform or omission or deletion of a word. So at this time, we're still in amendments on House Bill 305, and I would entertain any other amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move Amendment 1.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Okay. And Representative Lincoln, is Amendment Number 1 written the way you would like, or would you like to make a conceptual amendment to Amendment Number 1?
I would like to, Mr. Chair, offer Amendment 1 to Amendment 1, which would strike the word space.
Okay.
And discussed in the last meeting, the purpose would be to allow for other types of heat, not just space heat, but heating water tanks, for example.
Okay. So what we have before us is a conceptual amendment to an amendment. Is there any objection to the conceptual amendment? All right, so that is adopted. Now we have an amendment before us that has been amended with the deletion of the word space. Representative Lincoln, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Sure. So the purpose of this amendment is to allow for the department to have the ability to not seek cost recovery for residents who also have small commercial operations in their homes. So things like, a wood splitting business in the garage, or a small store in the entryway of a home, and things like that. Or the department would have the discretion to apply this rule in the way that, as they described, sort of a common sense fashion that it enables them to do that.
Okay. Any comment about the amended amendment today, and that amendment for the record is A.1. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was the one who objected the other day to inserting the word primarily in an incorrect place, and this is a great solution, and thank you to Representative Lincoln for bringing it forward. Thank you. I do not object.
Lincoln.
I just want to recognize Representative Tallarico for introducing the idea in the first place, and also thank the department and the lawyers that help us write this stuff for coming, giving us the help over the weekend and getting this done this morning. So thank you.
Any other comments about A.1 as amended? Let me ask. I think I know the answer, but Ms. Ryan, I see you're on the phone. Do you have any? Of course, it's our decision, but does the department take any great opposition to the amendment.
For the record, this is Kristen Ryan, the Director for the Division of Spill Prevention and Response. And thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, the department does not see any issues with the proposed amendment. It is consistent with how we would want to implement the legislation.
Okay. Any other discussion about?
Brief at ease, Mr. Speaker.
Brief at ease.
Mr. Chairman.
Amendment A.1. Is there any other discussion of A.1? Seeing and hearing none, there was an objection from Co-Chair Tarr. Would you like to lift that objection?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll remove my objection.
Okay, so that amendment is adopted.
And then, Mr. Chairman, just to make sure we're doing things properly, I'm going to make a motion to rescind the conceptual amendment adopted on Friday that has been replaced by the amendment just adopted now.
Okay. Any objection to that? All right, seeing and hearing none, that conceptual amendment from Friday, the 23rd of February, is rescinded. The amendment today, 8.1, is adopted without objection. It's now part of House Bill 305. That brings House Bill 305 before us. And I'm going to ask the committee, we did do public testimony on 305? Yes, we did. Okay,
yes.
I'm told that we did. So the amendment in final is before us. Is there any discussion about, sorry, the bill in final is before us. Is there any discussion about the bill? Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a fine bill. It'll help individual homeowners who find themselves in the difficult situation of having to deal with an oil leak. It'll remove any apprehension they might have about contacting the department and avoid adding insult to injury. I'm very glad for the amendment, and I'm happy to support the bill as it's written.
Okay. Any other comments? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also support the bill and really, you know, want to make sure we don't do anything that encourages people not to follow up and keep in close communication with the department. I do just want to point out on the fiscal note that this will be a $60,000 essentially sort of decrement in terms of what they were getting in cost recovery. And so, you know, we'll just have to kind of keep that in mind going forward in terms of overall funding, and that'll, you know, have to be paid for in another way.
Okay. Thank you, Co-Chair Tarr. All right. I'm ready to entertain a motion this time. Yes, Representative Johnson. Brief at ease. The bill in final, are there any comments about the bill? Seeing and hearing none, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 305, that's 30-GH2583/A, as amended with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations from committee.
Are there any objections to the motion? Seeing and hearing none, we'll go off record to sign the committee comments.
Moving them through. Yes.
The House Resources Committee is a fortunate committee in one circumstance this year. We have, pursuant to, I think, the Speaker's order, is how this works, but at any rate, we're only reviewing the applications of four of the nominees for boards and commissions, and that is not very many, in my experience. And they all come from or are seeking appointment to the same body, which is the Big Game Commercial Services Board. And what I'm going to propose, because I think it's most efficient, is to hear from each of the four in order and then invite the public to testify about any or all of the four that they wish to hear from. So I'm going to start with Michelle Hune, and I'd ask the nominees to remind us, and I should know this, I admit, but to remind us whether they are seeking a reappointment or an appointment. So we'll start with Michelle Hune from Palmer. Ms. Hune, are you available?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon.
Please put your name on the record and tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're seeking the appointment.
And certainly. To co-chairs Josephson and co-chair Tarr and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michelle Hune. I have been recommended a new appointment to fill a transporter vacancy on the Big Game Commercial Services Board. I retired from state employment in 2013, and I now own and operate our small family lodge business in the Talkeetna Mountains. I welcome the opportunity to answer any of your questions.
Okay. Any members have questions for Ms. Hune? Representative Tarr.
Thank you. Thank you for being available for questions today. I'm just wondering, you said you're going to fill a vacant position that's designated for a transporter, and is it your work with your lodge that you know, puts you as a qualified individual for that position?
That is correct. I have been a licensed transporter since June of 2014, and when the vacancy became available, I am very much outspoken, and I follow I follow rules and regs and statutes and very, very closely. I'm very on time with my reporting, and I decided that it was better for me to put up than shut up.
And a follow-up, Mr.
Follow-up, Representative Tarr.
Well, I appreciate that, hearing that, and I'm just wondering if you can comment, because one of the issues that has come up as a sort of area of tension over the last few years, and especially in with sheep hunting, is sort of the tension between transporters and guides, and discussion of doing something at the state level, like what's been happens at the federal level with the designated places. Do you have any thoughts about that, or ideas, or is that part of why you would want to serve on this board?
From my experience and my personal opinion, the transporter guidelines are very clear. And following those guidelines, and now with the fee imposed, it changed twice. But my personal feelings to the side, what is the regulation and the statute is most important to follow. And personally, I believe the transporter information is very clear.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Hune, and for the record for the committee, I've been advised, and I think it was my hunch, that the only person seeking reappointment is Mr. Tromley. The others were all appointed essentially a month ago by the governor. Ms. Hune, what background do you have in following big game laws and regulations?
We have had the family lodge. We've been in business since December of 1995, and due to the regulations of Big Game, for me to be a lodge owner and rent cabins to hunting clients required me to be a licensed transporter, of which I did, as I mentioned earlier, in June of 2014. The lodge that I own is also commercial food services, as well as being currently licensed in the Matsu Borough. So I'm very diligent following, like I mentioned, following the rules. And it's I just believe that there are a lot of things that can be ironed out that I don't believe that guides and transporters are that far apart. I think it's just a matter of working the fine details out.
Okay. And just to remind the members that we'll be signing a document that says that our signature, and that's all you'll be asked for, does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation. So this is to educate yourselves on whether to vote yay or nay, probably in April at a joint hearing. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the conflict of interest section, and it seems to me just at a sort of naive reading that the Board of Game would at some point make a decision which might have a material impact upon the finances of your business.
Just to clarify, it's the Big Game Commercial Services Board.
Yes.
But continue, Representative Parrish.
Why do you find that not to be the case?
the case for a conflict of interest for myself.
Yeah. Can you conceive of any circumstances under which the Big Game Commercial Services Board would make a decision with a financial bearing on your business?
No, I do not, because we're so weather-driven at the lodge that we're often not dependent upon the clients for revenue. My interest in the state resources is preservation of wild game and ethical hunting. And so as a transporter, I follow those as well. And I am probably one of the biggest proponents of keep the land as beautiful for future uses as anyone else. So it's not a conflict for me.
To be clear, thank you. To be clear, I wasn't trying to assert that membership on the board would itself necessarily lead or necessarily be a conflict of interest, but rather it seems that as someone who's got a professional connection to big game hunters, there might at some point be a question which comes before the board which would have a bearing on your business. But with that clarification, are you still convinced that there'd be no circumstances under which a conflict might
if it was directly involved Unit 13 at the location of where our lodge is at, I certainly would recuse myself from any vote. However, I just don't see that would ever be an issue. We're not just solely hunting clients. When the weather permits and it's permissible, we have great blueberries up in our area as well as other berries that can be picked. And we have we're on a lake where there is some trout fishing. So hunting is just not our primary revenue.
Thank you, Ms. Hune. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Representative Birch.
Clarification, I think the position, it requires somebody who is a licensed transporter, does it not?
It does, and she is one.
Well, yeah, it seems clear to me that there would not be a conflict and that's a specific requirement that we have somebody in that capacity on that seat. Thank you. I just wanted to confirm that.
Any other questions for Ms. Hune? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This isn't entirely a question. It's just good to hear from Ms. Hune. I had the privilege of just immediately out of high school is working up at High Lake Lodge, so I'm very familiar with it. And it isn't the kind of lodge that you're going to have one thing. I think that's what I just heard, is that this is something that you have to have a real spirit about keeping this lodge, or it's not going to be just the big bucks and the big hunting that is there, even though it's a great and place to be and it's a beautiful place to be. So I just wanted to say that she's well known in my community as a hardworking individual, and as much as possible, I'm not a close friend or acquaintance per se, but by reputation, she's certainly someone that if she sees a conflict, she's going to declare that, and also, but also brings a real professional spirit to her board appointment.
Thank you. That's important to me. Any other members have questions or comments for this nominee? Okay, I don't see any. Ms. Hune, we thank you for volunteering for the position, and we appreciate your time testifying today. So now we're going to go to Mr. Beans. Mr. Beans, are you on the line?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am on the line.
All right, so tell us your name and give us some information about yourself.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Robert Beans, last name spelled B-E-A-N-S. Real quick history on me. I was born and raised in Alaska. As a matter of fact, I was born on the reservation when Alaska was a territory. I bring to the committee a vast expertise, a vast experience on many boards and commissions, both at the local, region, statewide, and national levels. I understand the workings of a council, a committee, a board, what have you. I am seeking an appointment for on the big game to represent private landowners. My background on that is that I'm currently serving on the Jalista Angska Regional Corporation. Been on that board for the last 6 years. I also put in a total of about 5 years on a local corporation village board as well, and some 20 years in the at the tribal council level. That in a nutshell is who Robert Beans is. Oh, by the way, I I'm still sitting on that board. I do have 30 plus years on the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative Board. Been that chair for the last 25 years or so.
Okay, Mr. Beans, is there something called a landowner or a private landowner seat on the Big Game Commercial Services Board?
Yes, I believe there is, Mr. Chairman.
All right, and that would be your seat.
That would be the one I'd be seeking, yes, sir.
And this is Representative Josephson. And what is your understanding of what you're supposed to be representing in terms of a land? What does that mean to you to hold the landowner seat?
Well, what I understand about is Representative Josephson is that that the landowner would find ways to ensure that their land is protected when there is some hunting and fishing activity. That is my understanding of the seat.
Okay. Questions from the panel, from the committee. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to hear your voice, Robert. This is Representative Drummond.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drummond, it is great to hear your voice as well.
My husband is a good friend of Mr. Beans's and has known him for many, many years, and I think he's well suited for this position. Am I correct, Mr. Beans?
I would humbly say yes.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly. Other questions for Mr. Beans? Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'd just like to thank Mr. Beans for his 17-plus years of military service and subsequent service with the corporation.
Thank you. Thank you for saying so.
Representative, through the chair, I thank you very much for recognizing that. I would do it again in a heartbeat. I would also put in the 10 years of law enforcement as well in a heartbeat.
And Mr. Beans, where is home for you? Is it Bethel or Anchorage? It's Palmer.
My home currently is in Palmer.
Got it. Okay.
I relocated here from Bethel when I was working for the USDA Rural Development office here in Palmer. And I have since retired and taken up other activities aside from grandchildren.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Beans? All right. Thank you, Mr. Beans. And we have one quick question.
I just was going to make a comment, Mr. Chairman, because I didn't have it fresh in my mind, that the regulated professions under this board are assistant guide, class A assistant guide, master guide outfitter, registered guide outfitter, retired guide outfitter, and transporter. And the membership includes two licensed registered guide outfitters, two licensed transporters, two private landholders, two public members, and one member from the Board of Game, just to give some context for the four that we're hearing today.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Okay, thank you, Mr. Beans, and appreciate your willingness to serve. So now we'll go to the third individual, Cash Joyce. Cash, are you on the line?
To the chair, yes, Cash Joyce is here.
All right. So you've given us your name. Tell us something about yourself, and if there are questions, you will get those.
My name is Cash Joyce, for the record, and I am a born and raised Alaskan as well, and I have multiple Alaska businesses, and I feel I'm suited to represent Alaskans unbiased and for the people.
Okay. He is, for the committee's recognition, he is a nominee for the Licensed Registered Guide Outfitter seat.
I believe it's the transport position is what I interviewed for.
Well, that's worth seeking clarification. The application definitely says Licensed Registered Guide Outfitter.
Sure, and that position was not vacant, so I am in a transporter seat.
Okay. All right. Well, that's helpful. The committee should take note of that.
So then he's a licensed transporter.
So you're a licensed transporter. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Joyce. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for being available today for us today, Mr. Joyce. And I guess the same question I had for the earlier applicant in the transporter seat, one of the things we've been talking about over the last couple of years and have had proposals before us, both as standalone proposals and budget language, is to address this issue of, you know, the way it's the transporter slash guide tension. do you have any thoughts about that or you know, how do you see your role in trying to address that?
Representative Tarr. I am just a liaison for the people. I don't have any private campaigns. I have multiple businesses. They all hinge on transporting, guiding resident and non-resident. I just don't have a personal campaign. And
okay. Representative Lincoln.
Thank you, Mr. Joyce, for the application. So are you, in addition to being a licensed transporter, are you also a licensed or registered guide and outfitter?
That is correct.
And follow-up? So I don't necessarily understand the space, and I think we heard a little bit about a potential conflict between transporters and guide outfitters. Could you just sort of in general terms describe like where that conflict is or could be?
I think we all have the right to use the land, resident and non-resident. And let's see, as a transporter or even a tour operator, you're unbiased whether you transport or guide or tour residents or non-residents. It's in your best interest to be unbiased. And as far as the conflict, I mean, I feel in this position I'm a representative of what the people want, and of course I have a say, but I don't have any ulterior motives or hidden agendas to change for my own betterment. Does that answer your question?
I don't think so. I mean, the board, there's two seats designated to transporters and two seats designated to guide outfitters, and I don't know if that was structured in that way because there is inherent competing interests between those two types of services provided. You happen to be, provide both services. I don't know if, not necessarily a conflict between user groups or where people are from or who people are or anything like that, but it's inherent to the transporting business versus the guiding business. I'm not aware of any just off the top of my head, but it seems like that was something that might have been spoken earlier.
Maybe I could describe the conflict. The conflict is transporters. Transporters transport residents and non-residents. Probably depending on species. Some species are regulated for non-residents must be guided. And so a transporter is more likely to transport residents or, residents and non-residents. A registered guide his business is founded on non-residents. So therefore, he might be a little bit biased.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Joyce, for being with us. For you, I've got the same question I did for Ms. Hoon. You own several companies which are basically founded on the big game business, it seems. Is that correct?
Yeah, transporter and registered guide.
So I'm going to read from the conflict of interest section. Is it possible that you or any member of your family will benefit financially by decisions made by the Border Commission?
I believe it's inherent that I might benefit or I might not benefit, depending what the people want. Regulation-wise, I'm just a liaison. I don't make the regulations.
Thank you, Mr. Joyce.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Joyce, this is Representative Josephson. I guess this isn't meant to be a quiz, but I'm just really trying to educate myself on these issues because I'm interested in them. But your view is that a transporter would serve in-state and out-of-state, which strikes me as accurate, and that a big game guide, although I could hire one, and I'm from Alaska, might be more inclined to look at out-of-state interests, which also strikes me as potentially accurate. Is that what you said?
That is correct. a bigger percentage of his interest is in non-resident.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Chairman Justice. I see on the application here, construction, South Central Alaska, and you have a residential endorsement. How long have you been doing that? And
all my life. It's I'm not bound by one occupation. I'm very capable in, you know, different occupations. So I'm pretty unbiased in whatever comes my way as far as business. So to answer your question about personal gain from conflict of interest, I really don't have any conflicts of interest.
And follow up, so you just depend on the season. You're seasonal, is that it, with this construction?
For the most part, I work every day, and one business can support another business. So
okay.
At all times, all three businesses are working.
All righty, thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Joyce, thanks for putting your name in. I was just wondering, I'm assuming, because you're not old enough to have been here before there was no examination required, you've obviously applied for and done the examination to be a licensed guide and a transporter. And would you see that as being beneficial as we move forward if adjustments need to be made to those? I believe the Big Game Commercial Services Board also works on recommendations for adjusting examinations, and they do a lot of licensing things. Do you feel that your particular experience in both of those might provide service to the state for improving the system?
certainly. I think, yeah, definitely. There's more and more interest in the industry in general. And, yeah, there's should be some hurdles to get over. Definitely.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly. Any other questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would just like to hear your thoughts on the difference of a viewpoint if you're sitting in the transporter seat instead of the licensed registered guide seat. I know you've kind of touched on those, but just to go over those again.
Well, let's see. My wife and I, we do have a air service. So transporting hunters is not our only income for our air service. I mean, that's a state endorsement, but we also have the FAA endorsement for 135 air taxi. So that's a major part of our existence. As far as the conflict, I just don't know how else to describe it. I mean, there really is no conflict. Of course, I want both businesses to do well, or all three businesses to do well. It's just something I'm involved with. I have to separate, you know, of course, I have to separate any bias I have for success to take the position, and with the committee's permission, I will. And if not, then if you feel there's a conflict, then I'll take it as it comes.
May I follow up?
Yes, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, well, I wasn't inferring there was any conflict. I was just trying to get a sense from you on what you saw the differences, I guess. But I do have one more question. In your own transport services, how many hunters, I mean, you have, how much of your clientele is drop-off as opposed to people that you actually contract with to hunt with and transport?
Right now, I would say the transporter position or the transporting is a smaller portion. We've had our air taxi certificate for, I think, 2 years now, and that is basically our air taxi is growing with addition of, you know, different aircraft, and our infrastructure is growing. So I can see it being the air taxi transporter position of my life being a better percentage than actual guiding in the future. It just hasn't had as much toehold in my life as being a registered guide at this point.
Follow up.
All right. Thank you. Lastly, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just lastly, I wanted to say thank you for putting your name in, and I recognize this isn't something that people do to make big bucks or streamline their businesses. Generally, this is a labor of love, and it takes time and effort from other parts of your life. So thank you for putting in your application. It's appreciated.
Sure. I'll make a note here because a committee member asked about the conflict of interest, the second part. The middle sentence there, is it possible that there could be a conflict with your family, business, essentially? And I think that people are answering no, partly because it gets into all sorts of hypotheticals and it's very hard to answer. But it invites a yes or a no answer. So I can't really blame them for saying no, but I do hope they realize that the answer surely would be yes in some circumstances. And then as to the first box, that's come up, or the first conflict of interest question, that's come up in another committee, and I am a little bit concerned when people answer that no, because what they're saying is they would not disclose their personal financial data. but I think they just misread that sometimes. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question about something you said. You said all have a right to use the land, resident and non-resident. Do you see any difference in the rights of people to harvest game depending on their residency status?
No, I don't. I think as far as I don't have a bias for non-resident or resident. I think I was born and raised here, and I too am a resident. I've hunted here all my life. I respect my neighbors and their residency and their will to feed themselves just as well. So I think some of that is regulated also by the state and the Fish and Game and what they allot to non-residents. And I think they're the governing body there, not me.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't see any other questions. Mr. Joyce, we thank you for your time. And we'll move on now to Mr. Trombley. Mr. Trombley, are you on the phone?
Yes, sir, I am. Adam Trombley here.
Thank you. All right. So, Mr. Trombley, if you'll give us your name, you just did that, and then tell us a little bit about yourself. We know that you're seeking reappointment.
That's correct. I am seeking reappointment to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. A lifelong Alaskan, I've been involved in public service for the last 10 years, and I was recently, even though it was my first year on the board, I was elected as vice chair of the board. So I've enjoyed being on it and tackling all the issues that come along with it, and just here to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, questions for Mr. Trombley. Okay, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell us a little bit about Nalco?
Sure. Nalco Champion is a chemical provider to the oil industry.
Thank you.
Specialty chemicals.
Okay. Other questions for Mr. Trombley?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Drummond.
Yes. Hi, Adam. How are you? Representative
Drummond. Doing very well.
The application says Public Offices Commission Board D as in dog, EAT. I'm not sure what that means. It sounds like a mistake. Can you tell us what seat you're applying for?
It would be the public seat.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, public member. Okay. Public member, yes.
Great. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions for Mr. Trombley? Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Trombley, would you please speak to your interaction with Big Game?
Sure. Well, in the past year, we've had multiple. Do you have anything specific in regards to that, or just my experience on the board itself?
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Both on the board and as a member of the public.
Sure. Well, other than just being a hunter myself, I've never actually been on a guided hunt. My uncle is a registered assistant guide. So as far as my daily interaction, it's been nothing. My experience on the board, though, has actually been very enlightening, whether it's dealing with some of the House bills or any bills that come up in the legislature and we either take a position for or against. And I would say that the thing I've enjoyed the most and that I've really gained a lot of respect for industry in and of itself is when people do violate rules, the board is very hard on those who do break rules. And that's been really good to see that the industry, now granted, some of these things, you know, by the time they come to us, they all come in the form of consent agreements. And so, you know, that person has said, yes, I violated, I took a moose, in a sublegal moose or whatever the case is, whatever violation that they did, and they've agreed to it. But the board at the end of the day has to approve of those consent agreements. And so the board has never said, no, we don't approve of this consent agreement. There are conversations that we have are, hey, look, we need to make sure that we're on the up and up, we're doing the things right, because we don't want the public to look at us and say, oh, they're just taking care of each other. It's a good old boy network and stuff like that. And I think that more than anything has been very eye-opening and very impressive with people in industry. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Okay. I don't see any other questions for Mr. Tromley. So at this time, I'm going to open up public testimony. Public testimony is open at 1:52. And is there anyone in the room that wanted to testify about the four nominees for the Big Game Commercial Services Board? I don't see any, but I believe that there's a Mr. Rohr who wants to testify. Mr. Rohr, are you there?
Good afternoon. I am here in Kodiak.
Tell us your name, Mr. Rohr, your affiliation, if any, and your testimony about any or all of the four nominees.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Josephson and House Resource Committee members. For the record, my name is Sam Rohr, and I'm the president of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. The APHA supports the appointment of both Mr. Joyce and the reappointment of Mr. Tromley to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Mr. Joyce is respected in the hunting industry. He's knowledgeable of the hunting industry, and his knowledge comes from his experience working both as a guide and as a transporter. The APHA also supports the reappointment of Mr. Tromley to the board. Mr. Tromley has previously served on the board as a public member. I would say he was a quick study of the issues that affect the guiding and transporting industries, and he really brings a unique perspective to the board. He's a good board member, and he's willing to serve. For these reasons, we support both the appointment of Mr. Joyce and the reappointment of Mr. Tromley, and we ask that you forward their names and that the legislature confirm their appointments. I would add that while I don't specifically mention the other two that have names are in for appointment, it's not because we don't support them. This is the first time I've really heard anything about them speaking. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. And thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Rohr. Any questions for Mr. Rohr? I don't see any. There's no one else online, to my knowledge, that wants to testify. So I'm going to close the public testimony as to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. That testimony was closed at 1:59. I'm now going to use the gavel again, and we'll go to an Ed East to sign the confirmation paperwork.
We need to make a motion, Mr. Chair.
Yes, thank you.
Brief Ed East.
Can we have the motion first?
Sure.
The Resource Committee has reviewed the qualification of the governor's appointees to the Big Game Commercial Services Board and recommends that the names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Again, this does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Representative Parrish, you object. I don't know whether there's an objection that's in order.
Representative Parrish, this isn't a motion to object to because we're just forwarding the names for consideration at a joint session. We're not taking any votes today. That's that the confirmation hearings are simply to illustrate and ask questions, and then we forward the names on, knowing that each individual can vote against them at the joint session if there are concerns about the applicant's inappropriateness for the position.
I understand the intent of your objection, but I've just never seen it entertained.
Well, if I may, I'll speak to my objection and then withdraw it.
Briefly.
So I don't have anything against any of the applicants. I think they would all serve well. However, as Mr. Wayne and Ms. Hoon acknowledged, there could be potential conflicts of interest. In fact, there would inevitably be some conflicts of interest. I trust them both to respond to them honorably by recusing themselves. However, the fact is that these forms are incorrectly filled out, they should have said, yes, there is a potential conflict of interest. It is possible for there to be a conflict of interest, and then explained the potential financial benefit.
My point, and I sort of made it before, is I would blame the form, because it asks a question, and there are many answers to questions. It should simply say, if you're right, Representative Parrish, that there could be a conflict, so tell us what you think about that. But it doesn't do that.
Well, it does say on the next line, please explain the potential financial benefit.
It does.
Which would be the appropriate place to say, under X, Y, and Z circumstances, if, for instance, we said if the board chose not to punish anyone ever for anything, it could lead to an upswing in the demand for their services. It's an understandable mistake, but it is a mistake, and therefore I don't believe that this is correct as it stands before us. Ideally, I would like to see it amended to include the potential areas of financial benefit. However, if that's not the will of the committee, then I'll withdraw my objection at this time.
It's not the will of the co-chair. I would say that these forms look identical to the ones that the Parnell administration had, and I would invite you to go to the third floor and have a discussion with whoever uses them.
There's nothing wrong with the form except the way that it was filled out.
I think the form is not great. That's my view. Representative Birch.
I think the confusion stems from the fact that if we have a realtor board, we appoint realtors to the realtor board, and realtors are in the realty business, and they may, in fact, make a living doing realty, and I don't think it's unreasonable that you have a realtor sitting on the realty board. And I think if you've got an open seat on the board of game that is for somebody that flies airplanes, and that's the seat you're going to be. And I think it's just kind of built in. And I think when you want to have that expertise, and I think we've had ample testimony here today that we've got folks that are willing to volunteer their time in that capacity, in that service. I think it's just kind of inherent that if you're going to solicit that expertise, and you know, however it's worded here, and I think it's a matter of detail that it seems fairly obvious to me that we're in good shape here. I think we've got good candidates, and I would encourage the board or our group to advance the names.
Yeah, and I guess the only other thing, and I don't want to belabor it, but I think there's enough checks and balances that during the meeting itself, someone would get, quote, called out, close quote, if there was an obvious problem. I'm hoping that that's so. All right, so we're going to resume. We have a motion. I'm going to go at ease, and we'll sign the document at 2:05. And today we have one bill to hear, a second bill to hear, House Bill 367. Representative Millett and her staff will introduce the bill. I thank her for her patience this afternoon with our other work. Representative Millett, please put yourself on the record, provide your testimony. And Mr. Rodvik, if you'll do likewise.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you. For the record, my name is Sharice Millett, House District 25. Thanks to the House Resources Committee for hearing House Bill 367 today. Simply put, House Bill 367 will take the liability from Alaska Native corporations for land that was conveyed to them under the ANCSA federal law. So just for a little historic perspective. In 1971, when we had our Native Claim Settlement Act, about 44 million acres of land were to be conveyed to the 12 Native corporations. There's now 13. The 13th is not a landholder. In those 12 Native corporations, lands were selected by the Native corporations, some of it in proximity to where they, where their tribal lands were, their village lands were, but they got to select lands, and they worked through the BLM process. What we found after years And just for full disclosure, I am a Doyon shareholder. I'm not sure if we have contaminated lands. I haven't looked through all the maps, but just so you have the conflict on the record. One of the things that have been had happened after the lands were conveyed, Native corporations went to build and to develop those lands and to for their Native corporations' benefit, and found that some of the lands in Alaska had been contaminated previously. Alaska has a storied history. You can look to the National Petroleum Reserve. It used to be called the Naval Petroleum Reserve. There was a lot of testing done in the lands. You can look to Amchitka on the atomic testing that was done out in Amchitka. So, you know, we were really a scientist's dream and a land of testing, and so we have a lot of lands that are contaminated. We also had a lot of progress in a short amount of time when it came to some radar. The Federal Aviation Administration did some white owl sites. We have a lot of things that happened in the state of Alaska. So you look back into history, and starting from the 50s to the 60s and 70s, we didn't have the cleanup that we had, requirements that we have now with our federal environmental conservation and with our state environmental conservation. So as they started developing these lands, they found contamination. What this bill, in effect, does is it says if those lands were conveyed to you and you are not the person who contaminated them, it was the federal government, we're going to hold you harmless. And as we've gone through, I went down and actually testified to the Senate Energy Committee about the legacy wells. If you probably all remember, on the legacy well issues, we had 137 legacy wells that were contaminated the land, and various folks had, some of them were from the military, some of them were from the Navy, some of them were test sites for drilling to see what the potential for oil. Those also, the federal government now has been taken ownership of the contamination, has cleaned them up. We started with 137 when I first came into the legislature, and now we're down to 23. So slowly but surely, we want to clean up these lands, and we don't want our Native corporations to suffer. Some of them, our Native corporations are very large, and some of them are very small. If they were held liable for the contamination on their lands, it would deplete their corporation. They can't and won't have the funding to clean up these lands to the necessary laws, federal laws and state laws that we have. So simply put, this is just to say, well, it was a great idea to convey, and ANCSA was a wonderful idea. Lost in the translation was that some of these lands were contaminated and now have been conveyed and actually are in ownership of some of our Native corporations around the state. And they're finding it almost impossible to take on not only the ownership of the land, but now the liability for having to clean up. And it varies from contamination to contamination site. You'll hear later when you have your testimony from the Native Village Corporations Association about how diverse those lands are and what the contamination on their lands are. So it's my hope that we can at least put some minds at ease as far as the state liability goes, and we will say, yes, we know that you didn't contaminate these lands. Yes, we know they're contaminated, but because you're not the contaminator, we don't hold you liable for the cleanup and the restitution of that land. And that's, in a nutshell, what House Bill 367 is. And I have Hans here, who's done extensive work on this bill in particular, and talking about how it works. So I would like to hand it over to Hans.
Thank you. Yeah, for the record, my name is Hans Rodvik, staff to Representative Millett. Just going to run through a quick sectional of House Bill 367. Thank you guys for the opportunity. So in Section 1, beginning on page 1, and that then runs on to page 2, line 23, basically referencing the creation of the new subsection N. And in Section 2, we are amending AS 4603-822M, which is including the new definition of a Native corporation as referenced under federal law, ANSCA, U.S. Title 43, U.S. Code 1602M. And that definition includes regional corporations, village corporations, urban corporations, and group corporations. So that's the whole scope. Section 3 adds the new subsection, which is the heart of the bill, subsection N, to AS 4603-822, basically removing Alaska Native corporations from the liability from damages or costs related to the release or the threatened release of hazardous substances on their lands, if that land was contaminated pre-transfer to them under ANSCO. And that is on page 2, beginning on line 26 to page 3, line 1. Section 4 is the final section of the bill, very short. It's basically repealing an insufficient attempt, which was trying to absolve Alaska Native corporations from liability, and we believe it was too narrow in scope, so we're replacing it with the new section created under Section 3.
Thank you, Mr. Rodvik. I'll start with just a few questions. The first is, I guess for either you, Mr. Rodvik, or Leader Millett, whether if the Native corporation selected lands after December of 71, knowing that they were contaminated, if that should make a difference. And I'm aware that the lands they select are pretty obviously in what was their traditional homelands, so they're not likely to select other lands far away from where they lived. But do you see any legal distinction there?
For the record, this is Representative Millett again. At this point in time, Representative, that's a really good question, but when the conveyance started, a lot of the Native corporations relied heavily on the BLM surveys, and so if they didn't lay out in their survey that there was contamination on land, in good faith, the Native corporations received those lands in conveyance, and to my knowledge, no Native corporation has accepted land at this. I mean, this kind of stopped at that point when they started discovering in the 90s that there was more land to be conveyed and that they were contaminated. So there's been a hold, I know, on a couple of different corporations have put those lands on hold until they can, you know, have some semblance of understanding what their liability will be.
Okay. And a couple other questions from myself, and then I'll field from the committee. You noted that this was about spills from the federal government. It would apply to spills that were not from the federal government, too, wouldn't it? If they were contractors of the federal government, is that an important distinction?
Through the chair, it deals with anything that was contaminated to the land. And it's much different. It's more than just spills. I mean, there's tanks. There was, like I said, the White Owl site. The Navy did a lot of testing up in some of the lands. Every single site is different. And I'll tell you what's interesting about some of the research that we did on the legacy wells is when the Navy came in during the time that they were developing the Naval Petroleum Reserve, which is now the National Petroleum Reserve, they've actually found barrels of things they couldn't even determine what they were. The makeup of what the consistency or the product that was in the barrels, you know, they looked back and, you know, Kathy Forster did a real good job of going back and looking and trying to find any particular, you know, substance that they could name, and there wasn't. So it's not just oil. It's a variety of things. It ranges from, you know, Native corporation to Native corporation and proximity to where the lands are.
Okay.
And just to add on to that, Representative Josephson, the largest landowner responsible for the contaminated lands is the Department of Defense, mm-hmm. as 162 sites as of 2015, and that was confirmed by Alaska Department DEC.
Thank you, Mr. Rodvik. And my final question is, what is it that the Congress would do on its end?
Hopefully a lot. As you can see, when we went through this with the legacy well issues, we actually asked them not only to take responsibility, but to find an avenue for money. What we did with the legacy well, and hopefully, we'll continue past just the liability on this issue. But Senator Murkowski found a helium sale. They were selling all of the United States helium holds. And in that bill, they put a $50 million rider, and that money went specifically to the 137 legacy wells. And that's how they funded cleaning up. I think they actually funded 67 wells with that $50 million. And we'll still need another $90 million to $100 million. But hopefully we can continue to have that conversation and get these sites. A lot of the Native corporations are petitioning those federal agencies, which there are many of them, to come back and help clean up. But again, it's a budget issue always.
Questions? I think Representative Birch was first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I asked this question earlier, but is there a potential for returning the lands? I mean, obviously, if they're claimed under a misunderstanding about the level of contamination, I mean, can you get to a point where it's so contaminated you kind of go, hey, you know, time out. We don't, we'll take that chunk of land and we'll trade it for another piece of real estate. And I just don't know. I'm not familiar enough with the conveyance process, and I know there's over selections involved, and that the over selections in part are due to the fact that in case there's some entanglements either in the property, the ownership, or the issues associated with the property, that can kind of realign. But is that option out there in some of these cases?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, this is Representative Millett again. It's happened actually. Right now, there are some lands that have stopped taking the transfer. They've stopped the transfer. I know some of them are still looking because there was a large amount of overselection, and just for this reason, for some of these reasons. And so, I'm not sure about giving the lands back. I'm not sure. Maybe Hans can answer that.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, I'm not 100% sure on that. But as we've seen in terms of dealing with federal land swaps down on the Alaska Peninsula, things can get a little bit tricky and delayed in terms of the process, where our, from a perspective of the state land, swapping lands, I'm not quite sure if the Native corporations would be so happy to give up 1 million acres of contaminated lands for 500,000 acres of clean land.
Thank you. Next, other members have questions.
I do.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This issue we've discussed I was chair of Conference of Mayors, and I know during our mayor's meetings that this was discussed at length for a variety of places around the state. It's actually rather impressive the variety of hazardous substances that are out there. I mean, it seems to me like by Nome somewhere there's a large deposit of radioactive materials that, and I don't know what land that is on, but I know that was discussed. Anyway, I think that this is I think it's something that's going to address an issue that local government and local officials have talked about. And I'd really like to see, as this wins its way through the process, I'd love to see local government support resolution or something on this, because I know that this is near and dear to a lot of villages and communities heart, and I think if we move this forward to the federal to our federal delegation, or to asking for federal assistance or responsibility, that having that local government input would be very valuable.
And to the chair,
yes, Representative Millett.
Representative Johnson, I agree, and we're continuing to work with folks to get letters of support so you can have a wide breadth. But I can tell you, for the Kuskokwim Corporation, which is one that went down and testified down in D.C., they're having it. The lands that they have that are contaminated would wipe out the revenue that they've generated, and they would literally cease to exist if they had to assume the cleanup and the contamination that was done on some of their lands. And so it's a huge issue laying over the top of folks that, received the land in good faith and through, a federal settlement, that now they become the landowner and figure out and find out that, all of a sudden that there's, A, it's not usable, which, was frustrating at best, and then to have this contamination and to use it, you have to go in and clean it up. So we're looking for support. I can't imagine anybody being uncomfortable with this as we went into the agreement in 1971 with good faith.
And just for the committee's notice, the bill was partly motivated by the problem that's being described, but also by a recent hearing where we heard from the Alaska Native Village Corporations Association. Their PowerPoint has been copied for the members in case they disposed of their other one. There's a second PowerPoint from last fall called Brownfields Resources for ANCSA Contaminated Lands that's also probably on basis. It's also in the hallway. Representative Johnson.
I just wanted to say I think this is it's an issue that we discussed often, and I think this is a bill that's overdue, actually. Very good. Thank you.
Representative Lincoln.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we have some people online to testify from the Village Corporation Association, so I don't know if this question is better directed at you or Hallie, I think her name is, but the way I understand it is that the ultimate remedy for this is in the correction of this historical injustice to our state, not just the ANCs, but the fact that the federal government and others contaminated our land in a very serious way and haven't done anything to clean it up yet. That we really want to try to build a unified voice for all of Alaskans, the state, and our partners with the village corporations, so that we can go to D.C. and advocate together to help resolve this. And that one of the concerns is that especially smaller Native corporations, because of the threat that liability poses to them, and it's like existential in some of them, it's just like they couldn't afford to possibly carry that burden, that they're disincentivized to even work with the state of Alaska and Department of Environmental Conservation to help identify the sites that they could potentially be aware of them, but because of the risk to their existence as a corporation, don't really want to cooperate fully. And speaking to that, I think, is the other presentation that our co-chair mentioned from the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, that the first three recommendations for action were establishing a forum of ANCSA landowners, federal, state, local, tribal agencies to encourage the exchange of information, discussing issues, two, to compile a coordinated and comprehensive inventory of contaminated sites with input from all parties, which I think this legislation, this bill before us, would help facilitate. Mm-hmm. And then, basically work together at the federal level. So I don't know if I've described sort of the strategically, I guess, the approach that we're trying to take together with this or not well, but can you speak to that, or should we wait for Hallie?
Yeah, that's good. Through the chair, Representative Lincoln, you're absolutely right. It's not just Native corporations that have contaminated lands. I mean, this is Alaska was considered the Arctic testbed. So whether it was AMCHICA for atomic testing, military installments, testing out. I mean, it was fascinating to learn about the history of Alaska and what was tested up here, because for the military back in the 40s and even back into the 30s, 40s, and 50s, they were doing all sorts of testing up here because we had such a low population. And they thought, oh, no one will ever inhabit this land, especially as you look down AMCHICA, going farther down to Shimia, even into Attu, there was just a phenomenal amount of science going on in our state. And science that right now, anybody that would say, like, should we go out and do some drill 3 miles down in AMCHICA and drop an atomic bomb to see how it would happen? Well, I used to fly out to AMCHICA, and we used to wear radioactive devices when we get off the airplane, because that, I mean, AMCHICA is a prime example. No one ever thought that you'd want to live there. We probably can't now. I mean, there's a couple man camps out there to assess the cleanup. But our state was amazing. But you're right. It's not just Native Corporation lands. It's municipal lands. It's our own state lands. And as we talk about this and raise the awareness to this, we've found people in other states, especially the farther west you go from Washington, D.C. west, there's a lot of states that have similar problems. You see the Superfund sites that you run around the lower western part of the United States, and they also have issues like this. But nowhere has it been so unique as the testing that was done in Alaska, prior to statehood, where, it was land, it was a territory. We'll just go up and we'll test whatever we want and take the stats back. But you're absolutely right. Having one voice speak for Alaska to elevate the conversation that we have, obviously great, beautiful land, but we want to be able to use it, and we want it to be vital. And for the Native corporations, we want them to be successful and share that wealth among Native corporations and with the state of Alaska. So you're absolutely right. We want to speak with one voice. We want to identify that. This is one step that, we'll continue to work on how we develop a strategy going forward to work in concert with the federal government to clean those lands up. And that, that's what I'm really looking forward to. So you're right.
Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Chairman Josephson. Representative Millett, through the chair. So how does this work? They have to be pre-identified? They have to be already? Anything that comes up after? How does all that work?
Through the chair, there's no rusher. So what this bill would do is those lands that are identified that have been conveyed or would be conveyed that have contamination prior to ownership. So that means that it was contaminated prior to the handover, that the native corporations didn't cause the contamination. It goes back to Representative Lincoln's point. You know, there's a lot of fear in going out and surveying land and like taking an inventory of your land because you're afraid, like, okay, I've found this much, I can't find any more because it's overwhelming. And if I'm going to have to be the person that cleans it up, you're stopping. You're saying, okay, I have all this already that's identified that we didn't contaminate. It was conveyed that way to us. So it has to be contaminated land that was not contaminated by the native corporation. And so it's outside of that. And so you're finding out, and you know, that's, and, you know, 44 million acres is a lot of land, and it's, some of it's in very remote places that hasn't been inhabited or looked at for, you know, decades, and now they're going out there and they're saying, okay, like, hey, let's go look for oil and gas, and they find a site where there's, you know, barrels. Perfect example, just barrels that were buried, because that's how previously in the 30s, 40s, and 50s we got rid of contamination, is we buried it thinking that would. And that's now it's seeping into the soil. You're absolutely right. It has to be contaminated prior. Someone else did the contamination, not the native corporations.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I mean, I know there's a process for doing an environmental assessment where you go back and look at the history and so on. So it's not done without reason and thought. But do you have any sense of how many environment, you know, this is kind of very abstract and hard to answer, but do you have any sense of how many of the corporations have attempted or done anything with environmental assessment of their lands? I mean, like you said, it's like you start looking at it and maybe you think, well, maybe we don't want to go there, but maybe some have.
It just depends on if you're, so there's, you know, the 12, there's a lot of landholders, so there's 12, the native corporations that have the land, and there's tribal corporations, there's village corporations that have, you know, subsequently gotten parts of that land. So it's a hit and miss. I know, I think in one of the reports there is over 1,000 contaminated sites that have been identified, but probably anticipate more than that. And the degree of contamination, you know, varies. It could be just, you know, a simple cleanup that could, you know, go in the hundreds of thousands of dollars to the extreme of, you know, millions and millions and millions, as we've seen with the legacy well issue. One well, Ico Bay right now, they're still continuing to work on having problems plugging that well. It's gone up into, you know, the tens of millions, which wasn't anticipated. So,
and Representative Johnson, through the chair, I think on Wednesday we'll be able to hear from some of the corporations, and they can probably give better testimony in terms of, from a larger perspective, how many folks have tried to do these assessments. Doing the research, there was a Bloomberg article that I found that basically highlighted the fact that Representative Lincoln pointed out that certain corporations, depending on their size, are very reluctant to come forward and say that, okay, we found a real problem here.
And actually, we're going to be hearing, we've got three people who are listening in now. We'll be hearing from them shortly because they were on for invited testimony. Representative Millett.
Thank you. And one of the other things that I just want to point out to the chair is that we, when we went down and testified, you know, the Department of Interior understands this issue. They commissioned a report, and then they did a update of that report, and they have some action items within the report that they would like to go through, and as of yet we haven't hit on those. And so I think the Native Villages will talk about how that report from Congress went, and an updated report. We asked them to update it when we were down there working on the legacy wells, but you can see that the report started in 1998. They did an update in 2016, but there are volumes and volumes of information about what's happening, and they're slowly recognizing that they are the responsible party for these lands. But again, we go back to budgeting and money, and how do we allocate funds to clean up these lands? And I hope our next step after the liability issue is in statute, that we can go back and start working with our federal partners and cleaning up this land, so we can make some revenue off the land.
Okay, and Representative Johnson?
May I just ask one more question? So if So the Department of Interior understands the problem. I mean, I think that's certainly true. You know, I've heard that. So if we establish or we go with, we pass this, we identify that we want to hold the federal government responsible. Do you have any sense of, okay, so and we know a lot of this is military. There's a variety of things, but do you have any sense of where do you go in the federal government? Does that go through our delegation would take the lead on that or something like that? Yep. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Joseph, yeah, it will work. You know, we'll work in partnership with our delegation, and that's how it worked for the legacy well issue, and I anticipate it would work that. But we can also join with other states that have similar problems like this, and as we spoke for having a united voice for the state of Alaska, we can join in with some other states that have similar problems. But going forward, it's not an issue of who's responsible. I think we all know because the land was previously contaminated by the federal government. You know, one of the things that we had a problem with the legacy well was exactly identifying who it was, where Representative Josephson rightly stated that, you know, some of these were done by contractors, but they were all federally contracted, so they were all under the umbrella of the federal government. Very, very unique history for the state of Alaska when it comes to science, the test bed theory, you know, the Arctic test bed of the United States, and so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So at this time, we will go into invited testimony. Our schedule reflects that we're doing that, and we're going to do it. And so I'm going to just do it as it comes here. And the first person online on my list is Mr. McQueen. Mr. McQueen, are you there?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your patience. I know you've been online for a while. It was a pleasure to hear from you earlier, I think, this month, and we welcome your invited testimony. Just give us your name and affiliation, and then you can testify.
Thank you. My name is Curtis McQueen. I am the Chief Executive Officer of Aklutna, Inc. We represent the First People, Aboriginal people of Anchorage and part Matsu, the Aklutna Dena'ina. First, I've got a comment. I have been listening since this meeting started. I cannot tell you how much it warms my heart to hear the great dialogue and feedback and the sense of support in that room. Several of the lawmakers on that committee are from Anchorage and one from Matsu, so they can maybe relate a little bit to the Aklutna story. We were relying on information we received prior to 1971 when we made our land selections, a little bit of a unique story in that because of the military base, because of a city, a lot of our Aboriginal lands were already occupied. So we were limited on what was left, which partly drove our selection process. And we're still in the process of receiving some of our remainder land. Out at the village of Aklutna, people are very familiar with the Aklutna River. At one time was a raging, beautiful river. We are in the process of removing an old hydroelectric dam and restoring that salmon habitat up there. But we're also very pro-development, helped MEA get their power plant in there while we're removing an old dam. Very supportive of the military. Our contaminated sites are formally used defense sites. Camp Mohawk was a mobile camp out behind the Aklutna School, which many of our current elder Native leaders grew up at. It was between the Cook Inlet and where the village is right now. We have worked with the tribal side of our village through NALUMP, which has cleaned up a lot of the surface, drums, wires, contamination from Camp Mohawk. But PCBs and old diesel has leached down to a silt bed that is a plume, as they call it, which is currently working its way out to the mouth of the Aklutna River and Cook Inlet. Obviously, that has us concerned with all the work that the state of Alaska has done, many of you, including us, to restore king salmon in North Cook Inlet. But our story is one of balance. We're very proud of the current Alaska military. We are owed 17,000 acres of jaybear, which will eventually come to us, part of Angska. We've been a partner with the military I'm going to try to hit a couple high points where I've heard some questions from the group there. One of the main agencies that is the lead now of trying to track, identify the contamination in Alaska, and then eventually address cleanup is the Army Corps. We have been partners with the Army Corps, a great agency when it comes to cleanup. They lack enough dollars to do the cleanup, but they have been incrementally been getting more money to study where contamination is. They have named the Eklutna site a flood site, formerly used defense site. We are probably three-quarters of the way, maybe 5 years into the research of where that plume is. We're optimistic that maybe in the next 24 months a plan of cleanup will be identified. That certainly won't mean the money is there. Predictions right now are well into the millions, maybe tens of millions, just to clean up our site alone. The congressional delegation has been incredible of identifying this and trying to help identify future dollars. We have been advocating on behalf, if there's any one particular agency that at least we can identify would benefit from more federal funds, it would be the Army Corps. It may even be that the Alaska State Legislature might be able into the future do a resolution to our congressional delegations just supporting the various agencies that are responsible for cleanup. We also have contaminated sites that were not military. I really appreciated the comments of Representative Johnson, former mayor of Palmer. She's probably aware the Mat-Su Borough ended up having to clean up part of what's called the original Mat-Su town site, where the railroad came through back in the late 30s, early 40s. Eklutna received some of that land in our conveyance, and it was contaminated, and there was an incredible joint effort between the Mat-Su Borough, Eklutna, and the state to clean it up. Long story short, DEC, from our perspective, and I can only speak from our perspective, has been really good to work with. They have not gone out and technically identified and forced village corporations to clean up their land, as Representative Millett, and we really appreciate her leadership, articulated that would bankrupt many of the 179 small village corporations that are out there right now. But the fix that's in front of you is administration's change, staff change, just in case there would be someone new to DEC that may be new to Alaska, not familiar with ANCSCA, and if they followed the letter of the statute, they'd be identifying contaminated sites and making the landowner start a process, a very expensive process of trying to deal with a cleanup. This is a fix to at least not go that direction, but many of us are working very hard through the Alaska Native Village Corporations Associations to now move toward the funding aspects. And so there's a movement in D.C. and in Alaska to be pro-development and support our development, which ANCs are a big part of. At the same time, not to forget that we've got quite a mess on our hands, and we need to clean it up. We represent Alaska as a great place for tourists to come. I'm very proud of that. At the same time, I think this is a story that a lot of folks don't know about. So we're just focusing on being proactive and solution-driven, and I greatly, greatly appreciate the testimony that I've been hearing today on this. And with that, I'll end it, Mr. Chair, and be available for any questions.
All right. Questions for Mr. McQueen. First, Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, thank you this afternoon for your comments and testimony, Mr. McQueen. In going through the Alaska Native Village Corporation Association priorities, of course, I'm thrilled to see the support for the Stand for Alaska initiative. But what got my attention was swap ANCSCA contaminated lands with the federal government, and I brought that up a couple of times. You know, obviously, the first I think the legislation in front of us makes perfect sense. I mean, that's great, but the ultimate problem is getting the contamination resolved and cleaned up. And if you get to a point, at what point do we kind of throw up our hands and say, you know, if we can't get it cleaned up,
Do you have options for swapping ANCSA contaminated lands with the federal government? Is that a realistic option, or is there just too much paperwork involved in doing a reconveyance and moving that around? I'm just kind of curious from your you guys are short land anyway. So. Through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, I really appreciate that question. I would love to be able to answer yes, we have that option, but I don't believe we do. I think it was referenced by the staffer. I may be incorrect, but the staffer of Representative Millett, that so many interest groups now get involved. If the Kloutna, put it this way, we have still not received the remaining 67,000 acres that we have been due for 45 years just up the Knik River watershed. We're in the process now of finally getting some of that conveyed, and hopefully maybe by 2019 the remainder. And that is clean, beautiful land that was just owed us from 45 years ago. The process from paperwork, bureaucracy, interest groups, all play into our perspective that trading is really not on the table, and it's not because of us. We would be open to that dialogue. It just comes down to the lack of land. There are many folks and interest groups that have opinions about the remainder of lands out there. Certainly we feel it with a growing MATSU and City of Anchorage. We're kind of sandwiched in between. If that was a possibility for that type of conversation, we'd be the first at the table.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions for Mr. McQueen, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. McQueen. You mentioned being owed a certain section of Jayberry land. Has that land been granted to you?
Kind of. Let me try to explain that. So we're part of the North Anchorage Land Agreement. We are owed approximately 17,000 acres of land through ANCSA within the Jayberry property, which was traditionally Kloutna land. The City of Anchorage is owed approximately, 15,000 acres. There was an agreement in the 80s where all parties decided not to go through court, and federal law was passed, which conveyed part of Jayberry. Interesting story, and I may get this wrong when I quote, I think it was the 425, but some of us in Anchorage and MATSU may recall just as recently as a couple years ago, part of Jayberry might have shrunk by the Army shrinking the base. The Kloutna people and many Alaska Natives have either served in the military, are military brats, or have family that have or continue to serve in the military. So Kloutna has been a big supporter of Jayberry. We look at it as a future conveyance that will come at a future generation, but it would be a dramatic impact to South Central Alaska if the bases shrunk for all the reasons we know why Alaska is so important to the military. But we're a 10,000-year-old culture, and I know you can respect that. And so, you know, whether it's 50 years, 20 years, or 100 years, that's really not a long period of time for a culture that's been around as long as we have. So after we get the Knik River conveyance completed, that will be the remainder of what we're owed, is the 17,000 acres of Jayberry.
I'll follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for the response, Mr. McQueen. I'm just looking at at page 2 and 3 of the bill, and I'm wondering if you were under law granted the land at some point in the past, or by court decision you were granted the land, and there were hazardous substance present on the land at some time subsequent to that granting, would you be on the hook if tomorrow there were a serious spill on those 17,000 acres of Jayberry? Under a strict reading of the law, has that land been granted to you and that grant just held in abeyance? Or what's the case exactly?
So the North Anchorage Land Agreement that's specific to Eklutna is a map of the Fort Rich region of land. So it is the land, if you're familiar with Anchorage, as you just get ready to approach Eagle River where the Anchorage landfill is. It is that section of land that we would end up receiving as, and it doesn't mean we'd receive it all in one lump sum. It may be that the base in the future would shrink incrementally. We would receive it incrementally. It has already been identified as far as a large tract of land. We are not familiar or aware with what is or is not on top. Well, let me correct myself, under that land, so we are not aware if that land is contaminated or not. At the time that it was conveyed to us in 1971, we just went off the information we had. So we won't know until we get it.
Thank you.
All right. So we have two more folks who've been online for quite a while, and so we want to make sure to get to them. And so I'm going to move on to Hallie Bissett of the Alaska Native Village Corporation. Ms. Bissett, please introduce yourself, and we welcome your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Hallie Bissett. I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Native Village Corporation Association. We represent about 176 member corporations that were created under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. So as you've heard, these were the village corporations that reside within the regionals, the 12 land-based regional corporations in the state of Alaska that still exist today. While there were over 200 or so villages that were created, there are 176 or so today by way of merger and whatnot. So we have been kind of fighting this issue since 2012. Within the 90s, as Representative Millett, who we're very grateful for introducing this bill. She's been a longtime friend and advocate for this issue. So it's really good to see some movement on this issue, and thank you to this committee for hearing us out again today. I know we were just in front of you recently, and here we are again. And I'm so very grateful for being able to come to you again and with a real solution. As we mentioned in our last hearing, what the liability shield does for us is it will allow us to move forward on those recommendations that were made in both of those reports. One of the things that we need to do is to really gather the inventory of contaminated sites in Alaska, and we believe that the reason, or one of the reasons, that we cannot get that done is because of this liability issue. Because as we've already heard, the minute a village corporation raises their hand and says that, hey, we might have a contaminated site, they are actually legally liable to clean it up. And even though there are administrative holes at the EPA and at the state and the DEC, we really can't count on that in terms of, you know, not being liable. So this fix at the state level is really an important step in the right direction. What this bill will also do is it will allow our village corporations to apply for a different set of funds. So in particular, brownfields grants, one of the things that we run into consistently when we're going through how do we get these sites cleaned up is that when we run into this potentially responsible party problem, the liability issue causes us to not be able to access certain funds at the federal level to clean up these sites. And so I heard a question asked. It was a great question. Are we trying to get these lands back into use? And that's exactly what we want to do. In addition, we're wanting to create cleanup jobs, technical training, and actual environmental cleanup work in villages where there is no work currently. So a lot of the things that will come out of this bill will be extremely positive for rural Alaska. We are trying to get these sites cleaned up. We're trying to identify where they all are. And Mr. Representative Birch mentioned one of our priorities is to hopefully one day be able to potentially swap lands with the federal government. But to answer that question, no, we are not there yet. We're taking small bites at this very big problem, and we're going to be coming back every single year to the federal government, at least when it comes to asking for appropriations for DOD cleanups, for instance. And then we'll be coming to you to prioritize at the state level with DEC, how can we prioritize anchor sites? And to talk to the one voice issue, the state legislature has always been a friend to us on this particular issue. We're very grateful for that. We have come to you for resolutions in the past asking for your support at the federal level on this issue, and you've granted us that, and we're very thankful again. It wasn't until last year that we were able to recognize through our legal analysis that we actually needed this Alaska statute change. And so it's been very heartening for me to have participated in the flying and then 1 week later have this kind of movement from our representatives. So we're, again, very grateful, and that really wraps up the comments from me. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Okay. Representative Tarr.
Hi there, Ms. Bissett. I just wanted to say it's good to hear that you have your voice back, so hopefully you're feeling better.
Through the chair, thank you. Yes, I am. Much, much better than the last time I was in front of you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Bissett. I think we'll now, since I don't see other questions, we'll move on to Mr. Macon. Mr. Macon, are you there?
Oh, he actually had to drop off.
He had to drop off. Okay. Ms. Bissett, since we've got 4 minutes, let me ask you, because I asked Representative Millett about this, and she talked about the budget, which I certainly understand, but what is it that Congress has to pass legislatively? Do they have to pass an amendment to the Comprehensive Environmental Response Law?
Yes, sir. In fact, we have been actually successful in the past year. Ms. McKean from a Fog Neck Native Corporation went and testified in front of the Environment and Public Works Committee, and Senator Sullivan was able to get an amendment to CERCLA. It's the Brownfield Utilization Act, the Bills Act. It's Senate Bill 822. So that's already in the works. Unfortunately, on the House side, and I don't remember the number off the top of my head right now, the House bill passed without our language in it. So we're watching that very closely. For when the House bill comes into conference on the Senate side and the floor, so we're hoping to reinsert our language at that time.
Okay.
Which would, it's basically the same exact language that you are providing here. It's amendment to CERCLA that gives us that liability shield.
Okay. Representative Lincoln.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm just wondering if you could just quickly elaborate on, you said that if this legislation passed in the state level that you would be eligible for sort of additional funding right now, or is that contingent on federal action?
We would, through the chair, thank you, Representative Lincoln, we would absolutely need both the federal and the state liability shield.
We need both.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, I want to thank Mr. McQueen, Ms. Bissett, and the committee, and let me do a little bit of housekeeping. Relative to this bill, we're going to hold the bill, but it's currently calendared for 46 hours from now. And so I would like the committee to, by 9 a.m. on Wednesday morning, I'd ask staff to take note of that, Wednesday morning, 9 a.m., to deliver to the committee any amendments to House Bill 367 that members may want to offer. Wednesday... we have two meetings Wednesday. Happy day. We have the Alaska Minerals Commission, and we have an introduction of House Bill 355, Fire, Forest Land, Crimes, Fire Prevention. We'll then take this bill up, that is House Bill 367, Wednesday night, along with resumption of, well, we'll have public testimony on House Bill 355. We will not meet on Friday. If there aren't other questions or topics... or matters to come up, then we will be adjourned at exactly 3 o'clock. Thank you.